Welcome to Disc Golf History and Legends, sponsored by Blue Power Disc Golf. And here is your host, Scott Stokely.
Hey, what's up, everyone? So this is the third installment of the Disc Golf Histories and Legends podcast. And before I do anything, I have neglected the last two times to thank Smashbox TV. They are the brains of this operation. They have made it possible for me to take this really neat idea with no technical know-how whatsoever. And they're behind the scenes making it all work. And I mean, this, like, it's not an understatement. This wasn't going to happen without those guys. So thank you so much. They've also allowed me to capitalize on some of their audience as well for this initial exposure. So thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Terry. From the bottom of my heart, this wouldn't happen without you. So this is episode 3, and this episode is the history of disc golf in Idaho. Now, a little bit of background on this. I've decided that I wanted to run at least a one-hour show for all 50 states and a dozen or so countries that were around in the early days of the sport. And it occurred to me today that when this is all said and done, we're going to have a 60-something hour documentary on the history of disc golf, as in-depth as you can possibly get. But I think it's important, not the length, but if I did even a five-hour show on the history of disc golf, I'd be talking about Los Angeles and all those kooks up in Rochester. I love the kooks in Rochester, but, you know, the Rochester guys. And then, of course, down in Raleigh and Charlotte, they're doing something. And then in a five-hour show, I would be neglecting 35 states probably. But every state has its own rich history, and I don't want any state to get left out. So that's kind of the genesis of this idea. Now, the ulterior motive I have, forgive me, but I am running 10 Blue Power Disc Golf events around the country this year, PDGA-sanctioned Blue Power Disc Golf events. And maybe it's just a coincidence, but I happen to have a couple of events coming up in Idaho several weeks after the first Idaho History podcast. Weird, right? But I want to announce it real quick. So in Twin Falls, Idaho, on June 30th and July 1st, and in Coeur d'Alene, I finally learned how to spell it, Idaho, on July 21st and 22nd, are both going to be Blue Power Disc Golf events. Now, these are different than the Blue Power events I've run in the past because these are PDGA-sanctioned disc golf tournaments. They're C-tier tournaments. They're basically back-to-back one-day tournaments, some division Saturday, some division Sunday, but they're traditional golf tournaments, 100% payback in cash for pros, 100% payback in prizes for AMs, CTPs, ace pulls. They're golf tournaments. You want to just come out and golf, come out and golf. The Blue Power, excuse me, component of these events is that on all of the events on Saturday, there's a free class for kids and adults, a disc golf class for kids and adults with special needs. So if you know anybody in that area or any of these areas with autism, Down syndrome, blind, paraplegic, CP, ADHD, kid or adult, doesn't matter. It's a free introduction to disc golf class. Every special needs player who comes out is going to get a golf disc just for having the courage to give this beautiful sport a try. And, you know, it's separate from the, like I said, you want to golf, come golf. But separate from that is this really cool special needs event on Saturday. That's my ulterior motive for doing the golf tournament is to be able to facilitate the special needs class. So come on out. If you want to come out, by the way, discgolfscene.com and pdga.com, please pre-register. So enough of me talking about me and my stuff. I want to bring on some guests that were there for the early days of the history of disc golf in Idaho. So we'll bring them on. Start. Hey, look at that. That's Smashbox TV did that. I did nothing. Hey guys, how you guys doing?
Good, Scott.
Thanks for having us.
I'm gonna introduce you guys in a second, but this is gonna be kind of neat for me because my first two history podcasts were in Kansas, and I had a decent idea of how Kansas disc golf started, and then Colorado. I had a pretty good idea in Colorado too. I don't know anything about the history of disc golf in Idaho, and we've not prepared anything. But I'm literally going to start with talking about, from a place of complete ignorance, and we're going to go from there. So starting to the right, we have Jack Wardian from Northern Idaho. Oh, let me back up. So we had Walt Becker in the middle on the bottom from Southern Idaho, but Idaho is a real big place, and the disc golf scenes, I believe, for the most part, developed independently in the state. So we needed someone from the south and from the north. So So we'll start with Jack in Northern Idaho, in the Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Is Jack Wardian? You know Jack?
Hey, Scott.
Hey. And then, like I said, Walt Becker down from the Boise area down below, representing Southern Idaho, and a couple of his friends, which I would, can you introduce them?
I'm Derek Ford.
I'm Billy Bob Smith.
And what's our up, main guys? Guy over here, Jerry, come on in.
Jerry.
That's beautiful. So I'm going to start with a real quick story about my first time disc golfing in Idaho, and then we'll transition to the sport. So back in the mid-90s, I created this something called the Discraft Double Series. I think it was the first national traveling events around the country. I got to go to 155 cities to run a disc golf clinic and run a doubles event. And I think there was about 800 courses in the country. So I pretty much went to all the courses where people played. And I really wasn't aware that people disc golfed in Idaho. But when I did my research, they said, well, you should probably check out the scene in Boise. Well, after 155 events, the two events that had the most participants at them, I still remember, was 72 players, was Oklahoma City, which everybody knows is huge, and Boise, Idaho. So Boise still holds the tie for the record, the most people at a weekday afternoon event I have ever run. Now I've run 440 of these, and Boise is still the top participating city. So that's part of my history. So we're going to start at the beginning, and I don't know if this is going to be up north or down south. You guys have to help me out. So when did Frisbee start in Idaho? I mean, it probably happened before the first course went in. When did the sport of Frisbee hit your state?
In the early 90s, I moved back from California, where I played NorCal and in Southern California. And I moved back. I'm from Idaho, and there was nothing going on for a whole year. I checked all the pages, newspapers, and TV, and nobody had anything going on. There was no courses. So I decided to start, an event. The first one was the World's Biggest. And that was in 93, and one person showed up. And it was this buddy of mine, Greg White, and he, with me, were the original founders of the club. So then I'm hard-headed, and we persisted, and the next year I did it again. And then we got like five or six people, and three of the guys were right here. And
really?
With these three guys, I could take on the world. And that's what we did. The next year, we were going to town and just we built our own baskets out of tires and chains. And we slowly started getting more and more people at our events where we had a chance to talk with the Parks Department as a force. You know, we weren't no longer just a little group of collective people. We were 20 people strong to, sometimes 40. And the Parks gave us a go ahead, and they told me and the rest of the guys here, they gave us 3 months. We would set up our tires and baskets in the park.
You hold it up a little closer. We got to see that.
Now, that was a later version. The first ones were all wood, and they weighed like 700 pounds each.
Gotcha.
And they went PVC.
So there you go. Nice.
They said, he gave us permission to put up those tires every weekend and on Wednesday. And we had to set it up for 6 months through the summer. And if it was a success, they would let us raise the money to put in the baskets. We had to do everything ourselves. And we finally got permission. We raised the money. We did work by hand, by wheelbarrows. They wouldn't, they gave us the land and that was it. And then they told me when we put in the first concrete, they said we had 3 months and this was still a trial thing, because in Idaho, I don't know, a lot of people are familiar, but it's not like California where disc golf was popular. And so I told them with a straight face, I had some more than enough time. And in 3 months, we had probably 50 to 100 people playing, and they couldn't tear it out. And since then, it's just grown and taken off. I had to put in another 9 holes right after that. 3 months later, we had to put in, or no, 6 months, we had to put in more and more holes because there was that many people playing.
Now, you say like it's not like it was in California, but, you know, every state had its first course, and every city within that state had its first course. And back then, you actually had to explain what the sport was. It's ground zero, right?
Yeah, everybody thought they were elk feeders. Or barbecue pits.
Barbecues, yeah.
Barbecue pits, yeah. We had some barbecues. And that was in the fall.
Barbecued.
The course got installed in the fall of 97. So that may be one of the first ones in Idaho.
It was the first real permanent basket course with tee pads.
And what course was it?
We put in multiple pin positions because I knew if I could get people out there, I had to get them sucked in. The best way was multiple pins. That way they wouldn't get bored of a little 9-hole course.
Oh, wait, hold on. I got a second. So this, wait, what course was this?
Ann Moe.
Ann Morrison Park.
That course went in 97.
You think I signed one of my discs? You were a little late, but we stayed. I got home at 11, almost got divorced that night. But I still got the signature on my PGA disc. That's in the closet with a plastic bag on it. Never throw it.
Being late was a tradition back then in Frisbee. It would have been rude to show up on time. Like, no, but I have to back up, though. The course went in 97.
Yes.
Yep. So the course with the largest turnout of all every event that I've ever run on a weekday had been in the ground less than a year.
Yeah.
At this point, that's ludicrous. I had no idea. So, how before the permanent course went in, how long did you say you were putting the temporary holes up?
Probably 2 years straight.
Pretty much every other weekend, 2 years.
Okay. And how did you, when you first started funding the baskets, I mean, how did you do this?
Sponsors. We got Papa Joe's was one of our first sponsors. The Idaho Statesman was a sponsor. McHugh Sports was a big sponsor, and they still are today. And so is Papa's. And
Flying Pie
Pizzeria. We didn't really beg, but we asked them. It says, are you willing to sponsor a basket for us so we can get this permanent? And they agreed, and they donated the money, and we did the work. We got the concrete trucks. We were wheelbarrowing concretes to the park. Hotty, 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 me with a broken ankle. And we just kept going on it, too. We got those first nine in. We poured our tee pads. We did everything. Concrete guy here. But, it was continuous. And we got this thing done pretty damn quick. Once they said yes, we got the concrete trucks out there, and we had to run through the park with glow barrels full of concrete because they're not going to drive out in the park.
They wouldn't let us drive 10 yards on a truck. You can ask Rico about concrete. Icon Concrete. Tried doing that in a wheelbarrow. We were there till dark.
Yeah, that was a reminder.
We were younger, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 years ago.
So the sport has a little bit of blowback now from neighborhoods because it came with a reputation, but I don't know if that reputation preceded the sport in Idaho. Like, what was how did the town or the neighbors respond to a course going in? Were they for it or did they lose their, you know what?
You know, I think they were pretty, they just sat back and watched it. It's the course, the park itself is surrounded by residential and some hotel areas. So we were pretty well received. there are fences along the lines, you know, so we didn't throw, you know, if you throw over the fence, they might get a little upset. But for the most part, it was a pretty good reception.
You don't find syringes laying around anymore.
But it was a very, but it's a pretty big park. So it covers some area.
So I want to stop because I just heard something from over that way.
I'm telling you, disc golf chased out the undesirables, and that's why they let us in there in the first place.
That was part of the agreement.
Because that
happened back then, and that was it was a fear of undesirables playing, but the opposite effect typically happened, right?
We had on Sunday doubles, we had a lady hit once. It was in a fog. The ambulance came, the fire truck came, and the guy that actually hit her, I mean, right in the forehead, just took her, couldn't see her anyway. And so they took four holes out of the winner's side because we had a winner's side we put in to accommodate for the grass growing on the other side of the park. So we kind of moved it around. And then people start playing it backwards over there and throwing up against traffic. And so that was, you know, throwing over the four-lane roads and stuff. So we kind of had to accommodate and redesign some of the holes that we put in. But it was nice to have an extra nine holes on the winter side of the other side of the park. That's like, what, mile away?
Yeah.
Something like a mile away. So we had a back nine. We played the regular nine, the other back nine of the original summer course, which was kind of nice switching them around. So we had multiple holes eventually.
We had 27 holes
out there in the park. Okay. And it was great. In the wintertime, it was great playing the winter side because it was, we chased the ducks out of there. And it was great. It was a fun nice. Side, but we still play that side sometimes.
So now there, what came first? Oh, by the way, let me just stop for one sec, Jack. So what's the timeline on Coeur d'Alene? Because I don't want to be like, I don't want to skip over you, but when did Northern Idaho, because if it's later, like the 2000s, then I'll kind of get to it, but when did disc golf make its appearance up there?
It's a little bit later. I'm a little bit newer to the game than these gentlemen are. I got into it around 2004 by my son, who was going to school at University of Montana and active with the Garden City Flyers over there. And he brought it home. So he asked me one day, do you want to go play some disc golf, Dad? And I said, what's that? This is in the 2000s. I think Farragut already had some courses in the 90s. And they were started in this area.
Okay. Now, were you aware of disc golf in Boise, were you aware of disc golf up in Coeur d'Alene? Because this was pre-internet days, basically. Like, did you know the sport was happening elsewhere in the state, or were you guys in, like, your own bubble?
Well, I traveled a little bit. There was a course at the University of Idaho in Moscow, which is... which is a lot closer to the Post Falls, Coeur d'Alene area. But like you mentioned earlier, the geography of getting north and south is pretty, you really want to go there. And I think for me personally, I knew of a scene in Spokane, but that was probably as close as, you know, what was happening. I think I played in Corbin Park in Post Falls was probably the first northern course I played in there.
Okay.
So, Corbin is the popular course here in Post Falls.
Which one is?
Corbin Park. It's right on the river in Post Falls on the Spokane River.
Okay.
And when I first got into the sport, I think they had, might have been 12 holes there, and it went to 15. But the city had issues, like these other guys said, down in southern Idaho, you get conflicts with other park users, traffic on the road. Being on the river there, you got people swimming in the summertime and barbecuing. There's a ball field there. So actually, the city wanted to shrink it down to a nine-hole course from the 15 that we had. And we went in and talked to them and addressed their concerns and came up with some creative ideas to take care of that. And instead of shrinking down to 9, we went to 18 holes, with one hole being pulled out for the summer months. So I think we came out ahead in that deal just by being cooperative with the city.
Okay. So what about tournaments? I mean, like in the early days, I mean, well, besides World's Biggest, and actually I want to let everybody know, because the whole World's Biggest concept is, you could argue, might have been the single greatest individual promotion in the sport for growing the sport. John Houck ran this event. And the idea was, is that back then, I think it was late 80s, nobody had heard of the disc golf, well, frisbee golf then. And so John Houck came up with this brilliant idea that courses all over the country would introduce a game of disc golf where people who came out would get a shirt and a golf disc for $10. And you would just play around for fun. But it was a way to entice people to come out to give the game a try. And I believe he was getting about 20 or 25,000 players worldwide to come out and play. But it required all these local Cubs around the country to buy into the idea, because they did all the work. No one made any money at this. This was all, I mean, John funded it, but it wasn't a for-profit venture. It was simply a for-promotion venture. So the first event you guys ran out there was basically, hey, come out, get a shirt and a disc for $10, and one person showed up, right?
Yeah. Yep. But then after that, I went and did some tournaments with the WFDF, and they sent my disc golf. We did catch, throw, and run, and MTA, and distance, and what else did we do?
Putting, distance, golf.
The MTA was the funnest part.
Yeah.
Watching this guy right here. Throw a whammo.
Oh, man. Just one hand, get it?
Yeah.
Where's the one? Where's one of those whammos, Derek? He's got like these. Derek, do you mind telling him what your PDGA number is?
Yeah, tell him his PDGA number.
Tell him your PDGA number, Derek.
My PDGA number is 1929.
What is it?
1929.
1929.
1929. Yeah. I joined the PDGA when I was playing in Phoenix. I played a tropical park course there.
Okay.
And my first golf discs were Midnight Flyers.
Yeah.
And he still uses them.
He still uses them.
What are you telling? Not your first. You still use them.
I have cactus spines in them from tropical park.
Yeah.
That goes way back.
So I started with the Rattler, if that makes.
Oh, what is
it? I'm sorry. I said I started with the Rattler putter, and I still use it today. It's disc crap, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what was the first tournament down there in the Boise area? I'd be, aside from the World's Biggest, but the first actual competitive tournament.
Yeah. Well, overall, Gem State Championships. And that one I ran for 20 years as a PDGA sanctioned event. When I finally set back and let the younger kids kind of take over everything. But I wanted to make it 20 years as a PDGA event. First one in Idaho, and then it's waiting to be picked up by the young guys and keep going. But we've got lots of others. That was the first PDGA
event. How many people came to the first one you ever had? What was your turnout for that?
Shoot, I think it's like
40-ish,
about 40.
Yeah, about 40. Bad. More than one.
No.
Yeah.
Back
better than your first one, Walter.
What were the tournaments like back then? Because I mean, it was a little bit of the Wild West, right? Or you came from California,
yeah.
You kind of brings professionalism to it.
Two divisions, you know, we were all pros. if you've been playing longer than about a month or two, you were a pro, and then the new guys were the AMs, or pro two.
Pro one and pro two
for a while there.
Made them feel good, and then we were lucky in Idaho, still freedom in the park, so you could drink and smoke. And the PDGA was a little different back then. So now it's a little more business, and that's fine. But we got long stories. Some of it's not arable.
And by not arable, you mean you're about to share it, right?
Yeah. I used to be good back in those days. Back when I first started.
Let me be clear. Like, I love where the sport is today. I love how professional it is. Everything about the sport today is everything I dreamed it would be. But the history of the sport, it was different back then, and it's a rich history with beautiful people. I'm not ashamed of where our sport came from, and nor should anybody. So I think I know where you're going with this, but share with the younger players. What was a professional tournament like back then? How was it different?
It was low-key. I mean, everybody was pretty casual about everything. Competitive to an extent, but you know, we're still pretty relaxed, I guess.
Longer hair. We all drank and we all smoked.
We were just happy to be playing in the park, really. To be able to set up our course and kind of take over. We were pleased as punch, you know.
Throwing in the trees.
And we were drinking punch, too. Drinking punch.
Okay, so let's jump up north. So I think we're on a similar I thought north came a lot later, but it sounds like we're on a similar timeline. So I know you said that you weren't there for some of the first courses going in, but what was your first experience up there like? Your first tournament in northern Idaho?
Well, actually, the first tournament I went to was over in Missoula, but it's interesting how the clubs in the region interact. And an active club in Missoula really was the initiating force for the club in North Idaho. Because my son came home from school, he started a summer league, and then I continued it when he had to go back to school. And then year following, he said, well, we should form a club and work on improving the courses up here. So we did that, and we've gone like gangbusters since then. I remember those early days, the club formed in about 2008. Now our weekly league high turnout was around 30 players. Tonight I just helped flight out a group of 69. We had a peak of 84 players earlier in the season. It's just going nuts. A lot of new people showing up. People who haven't played the sport say, what's this all about? Or I just started. I see all this excitement down here. You know, can I join in? And it's a great way to introduce players to an organized aspect of the disc golf rather than just, you know, a casual round with their friends. Just extremely.
Hey, Jack, can I ask you a question? Jack, can I ask you a question? How old are you?
Yes.
I'm just, no offense, but how old are you?
I am 66.
What's your division that you play in?
When I was in tournaments before, I was playing advanced grandmaster. I think I would be a senior grandmaster now, but I shy away from the weekend-long tournaments anymore. They're pretty tough.
Yeah, we got a senior grandmaster here, too, that I'm still trying to catch. And he's consistent all the time. You know Charles? Charles Parsons?
I don't. I don't know Charles.
He's 70. And he plays, and I try to compete against him. And this guy's just like, boom. And I'm like, dude, you're old. How can you do that to me? I'm only 55. You know, whatever, but. It's great competitive. It's a good friend of mine. All the people that I play with are good friends of mine, and we like seeing the different divisions now in the PDGA tournaments. Because I mean, you know, 20 years ago I used to be good, but you know, after age and still working, you know, sometimes I mean, like I won't be able to putt, I won't be able to drive. But it's one of these days, I'll get to your age and I'll play against you, and that'll be fun. You should come down to one of ours, and that'd be great. I'd like to see you down here.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We do have a world champion.
First tournament I played in, I looked at the online registration to see who else was signing up in my division, and one guy, his name's Wobbly Bob Paraway. I said, what makes them wobbly? I think he just kind of struggled going up and down the hills. He'd huff and puff, but boy, he threw a pretty good disc. He was very competitive.
So let me ask you.
Those were fun times.
I know you weren't there for the beginning of the courses, but I would love to give recognition. Do you know who the players or who the promoters were in Northern Idaho that helped first get the sport or get the courses in the ground and put on the first events?
Well, first courses were at Farragut, and I think Tom Walker was active initially there. I'm not sure who got it off the ground, if it was a park initiative or what. So I wasn't there at the very beginning, but I sure seen it grow since that time. When I first started, there were two courses at Farragut. There's now five courses that play off of a single parking lot there. It's getting to be a world-class facility.
Wow. Yeah, I heard that the big tournament in Farragut is one of the not-to-miss tournaments of the year now, right?
It is. The guy that's doing it now, last few years, James McLaughlin, has really taken it to another level. I ran it 3 years myself, back around 08, 09, and 11. And I thought we were doing pretty good when we got up to about 130 players. But James is pushing 200 and turning people away. So it's gotten to be a really big draw.
That's beautiful. Okay, so going back to Southern Idaho, so the courses in the ground in Boise, where did it grow from there? Like, who are the locations and who are the people that kind of picked it up? Or were you guys out there planting the, Johnny Appleseed, thing?
Well, I think it kind of progressed eastward from where we were. So going east, there's a place called Lake Walcott State Park.
There you go.
And had a golf course in.
Lake Walcott.
And that's an interesting story, and we'll come back to that. Yeah. But and also in Pocatello, they put a course in probably 1998, 99, somewhere around there. Twin Falls came later.
Yeah, with the Nova Grand.
Bengal Ridge, tough course.
Yeah. Bengal Ridge, I've played it.
Yeah, it's been pretty tough. Yeah. So at Lake Walcott State Park, there with the park manager, the park ranger, picked up this recreation magazine from the State Parks Association or something like that. And he saw an article on disc golf on it. And he saw a photograph of a disc golf basketball. So he said, okay, I'm going to have some local guy build up my disc golf basket. And I'll put in the course. So, to his credit, he had never played disc golf before. So he had these baskets made up, and he designed a course that I do not believe has changed. Not too much from its original conception. And it was just well laid out. The park, the layout of the park helps a lot. It's a nice grassy park, and lots of mature trees. But the baskets were homemade. Manufactured. They were welded, and so the baskets were cool. They had chains. They had a basket. They had a top. But what he couldn't get from the photograph was the floating ring on the bottom. And so the ring that held the chains from the bottom was welded in place. And every time you threw the disc at the basket, the disc would hit the basket and bounce backwards because there's no give to it. And so we quickly had to modify. Once golfers showed up and started playing the golf course,
there were lots of bogeys, let me tell you.
He figured out to modify the baskets, but that park is Lake Walcott and the staff there has always supported disc golf from the beginning. They are one of the bigger supporters of disc golf.
That's
yeah, and cool. You could camp out in the park, which is awesome.
Yeah, the baskets, so when you guys first put the courts in Boise, because we're not going to the earliest days, that must have been Mach 3s probably by 98, right?
Mach 3, yep. And my putts would go right through the same thing. I want to give a shout-out to Steady Ed.
Mach 3s
amazing baskets. They were great.
They were so good.
Yeah, they lasted 20 years before
We decided to replace them for some Innova. But Steady Ed helped me get that course in when we raised the money. Here's a quick little story. We were short. I didn't account for the freight. And the freight from California with steel tubes, steel baskets, steel chains was like $800 or something. And Steady Ed helped us out and took that cost. Otherwise, we would have been short on the money. And then I'd like to give a shout out to Tim Selinsky, too. He helped our club, gave us a discount for ordering through Innova, and so did Keith Murray at Discraft. And that's how we were able to get discs to give to the new guys with those new discs, and they were hooked on disc golf, and we were able to sit back and just smile. So shout out to Tim Selinsky and Keith Murray both. And good old Steady Ed.
That's awesome. So I'm not going to let you go. You're not going to get to skip over this. What is this? You said there was a cool story heading east from Boise.
Your story.
Which one?
When you call the Scott story.
Oh, dude. Well, we up here like to have fun in Idaho. So that includes spirits and other partakes that people like. But when you came up, you're doing your doubles. And you had a random pick, somebody played with you, but me and my partner got to play with your foursome. But you were a little late. I've been pounding beers. And so when we played, we have a creek that goes through our course, with little bridges. I was a little tipsy and I fell in the creek twice. That's my funny story. All the way up to my knees, dude. Soaked.
That happened back then. Like you said, it was pretty
catchy. You didn't fall in, you were retrieving your disc.
Yeah, to this day, you threw from our hole two all the way down to hole three, and people still remark on that throw, dude.
600, 700, whatever that footage was. That was awesome. I was there.
Yeah.
You shake the first one, though, Scott. Yeah. You shake the first one to the left, but the next one just went right down the line, through the trees, right towards the
basket. That tree is gone now, like most of the trees on that course.
Hey, the only good thing about getting old is I made really cool golf shots like in 1990s, and every single year it gets 10 feet longer. So,
now, you know.
I can't think of a second thing good about getting old. That's the only one. So while this is going on, so the sports developing up north is developing up. Was there any traveling back and forth between? Was there a rivalry, or were you guys really just independent worlds?
Snake River Series.
Well, we're pretty isolated north and south wise, but speaking from the southern portion, you know, the southern part of Idaho is probably the widest part of the state. So when I mentioned Lake Walcott and Pocatello, there's Twin Falls also.
Cascade.
In the year 2000, we did something called the Snake River Series. As the Snake River runs through southern Idaho, we played, it was a four or five event series. We played in Boise, played in Lake Walcott, played in Pocatello. We actually played up in a small town north of Boise called Cascade, which had a temporary course. And then we journeyed just across the border to Wyoming in Grand Targhee Resort, which is one of the nicer mountain courses in the area. So we had a five tournament series for 4 years until the tournament directors got burnt out on it. because running the series is hard work.
Yeah. No,
yes, it is.
For sure. So, but that's cool though. So, who were like in the early days? Let's start with the South. Like, who were the top players initially? I mean, I know, Walt was probably the top player for a while, but who stepped up?
Oh, man!
Couple days.
This guy over here was. He was one of them.
As Billy mentioned, we were all a little better when we were younger, so we kind of flipped around.
We were all pros back then, man. Scott, I'm telling you, I could throw a good 350.
We called ourselves Ida Pros.
Ryan Toombs and Brett Andy Moss. Meyer, Brett Moss.
There's a guy named Brett Moss from Seattle, played Stellicom, came over, and he could throw our longest holes in birdie him. He was the first.
He was early member too.
Yeah.
Brett was back in the day.
Okay.
But
what about
as far as the guys that are throwing today, I mean, you see these kids, they're coming out, they're 16, 15, 16 years old, and they're throwing 700 feet, and you're going, why do I even play this game anymore? You know, I mean, I used to be good back then, but I still support the golf thing because it's, I mean, every Sunday I hold Sunday doubles. For 14 years, I did the Ice Bowl.
Yeah,
Winter Series. I mean, we just keep going and we just keep producing. I mean, the Ice Bowl is a good thing that Rick, you know, I'm kind of computer illiterate. I don't like dialing up. I don't like putting my credit card number over the phone. So I have to talk to Rick on the phone saying, hey, Rick, hey, man, did my order get shipped out or not? I've got like 80 people coming up here and they want their stuff. And he's, you know, and Rick has talked to me for, you know, last 14 years and stuff. He says, everything's cool. You're going to get your stuff.
Yeah.
It'll be there tomorrow. And
Rick Rothstein. Shout out to Rick.
Yeah, Rick Rothstein. Yeah, he's a good guy. And we started off small with the Ice Bowl. I mean, we had 20 people. We raised, but 200 pounds of food and $129 in cash. And we're going, woohoo! And there's like 20 of us there. And then so I'm trying to beat the record and everything, you know, and we've done a lot better. The statistics are online and stuff. You know, I mean, you can see how they just climbed and climbed and climbed. But it's Ice Bowl is a good tradition for disc golf in Idaho and everywhere because they do it all over the place and it does a good thing. And I feel great about it afterwards. I'm so humbled by it. People showing up, bringing food, bringing money. We have a raffle. I cook chili. We have a great time.
Billy Bob's chili.
It's hot as hell too.
Hey, just so you know, Scott, between us, I think we've designed and put in over, I would say, a dozen courses in Idaho, throughout Idaho.
Beautiful.
Us four right here.
Well, there's countless people that got credit to that. The guy that owns this shop, remarkable guy, does everything for this club.
Yeah. Shout out to 208 Disc.
Yeah, 208 Disc. Jason Austin.
Jason Austin. Hey, we got a story. I'm going to let Derek tell you about the pineapple. Or Billy Bob, you talked about it.
That's not my problem.
Let's hold on one second. I want that story in one second, but before I don't want to skip over Jack. But
no problem.
Coming back to the pineapple story. So who were the top dogs up in the northern region back in the early days? I mean, I'm sure some of them came over from the Spokane area, but specific to Idaho, like who are the players to beat?
Well, Tom Walker was one of the top pro players that lives in Idaho. The interesting thing that sticks in my mind is that it wasn't dominated by one individual. There are just quite a few that were competitive at the top level, so you never knew from tournament to tournament who was going to come out on top. That made it more interesting. There were tied in with the Spokane group. We had Montana players coming over. Christian Dietrich showed up at a lot of tournaments over here. And of course, he was usually right there at the podium when he played. But no one player really sticks in my mind. I just saw a lot of different faces taking those top trophies.
That's fun, too. What about female players? Was there a women's division that, I mean, that's always been the challenge. I mean, lately, it's blowing up, but I mean, was there a women's division initially? I mean, it was offered, But were there any participants, or did that come later?
It's offered. Yeah, there are some lady pros, not Idaho, but in the Spokane area, a number of them.
Okay.
Melody Bailey, Shauna Buzzingham currently.
Okay.
One thing I enjoy about our weekly league is we're seeing more and more ladies come out for that. I think tonight there are at least 8 ladies over there signed up for the event, which is great to see. So it's expanding.
What about down south? Like, was there a women's division, or like, how did that kind of evolve?
Well, when the club first started, we had a couple ladies that would show up and play frequently. You know, it's kind of hit and miss. So that's, I don't know who that is.
Is that a woman?
Yeah. My wife. I've been married for over 20 years. All these guys, we're still married.
She used to come out all the time. Yeah, she did.
I'm a disc golf widow. So you know, Scott, we are all still married. Our wives didn't divorce us.
That is kind of
strange. Scott directed all 4 of you? Impressive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the ladies now are pretty strong group, and they play frequently. But, you know, obviously, year 2000 or so, it was pretty slim pickings for the ladies.
There was only one or two that ever came out. Now they have a whole league.
They have their own. Yeah, they have a league of their own.
They have a league. They do it on the same night as men. They do it on the other side of the park, and it works out well.
And actually, Sarah Holcomb is from Caldwell, Idaho. She's a very top-level player right now. That's her hometown.
I might have heard of her.
But she never played in Boise, as far as I know, before she started. So I think she drifted to California.
She went to college.
I got
you. Designed a nice little course over in Caldwell, though. 18-holer.
I love it. So
hey, let me pineapple show you this picture.
Okay.
There we go. That's the pineapple basket.
It's Derek's invention, and we played this on his property. He had a 18-hole course. These are not changed. People are
taking it over closer.
Whoa, Billy. Yeah. Hold on a second. We're streaming here. I'm not good at that. These are PVC. They're ropes.
Okay.
They're PVC chains with ropes and PVC baskets that are made of barrels.
Generation there.
Yeah. And it's all PVC, so when you hit them, they go... And they don't go ching, they go... It was great. It was an invitation. We all had to wear pineapple or Hawaiian shirts to it.
Invitation only.
Invitation only. And we'd always watch the Vikings. The Vikings would always play that
thing. Hey. This club was started by Vikings only.
1, 2, 3, 4, all Viking fans.
Whoa. Oh, Minnesota!
Oh!
So one of the things, Billy was mentioning the ice bowl, and one of the advantages that we have in southern Idaho and Boise specifically is the winters are very mild, relatively speaking. We don't get a lot of snow. Walter has run something we call the Winter Series for many, 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 many years. And what that involves is we would you're blocking my face, man. So instead of playing at Ann Morrison Park, we would lug our temporary baskets out to these other smaller city parks and play guerrilla style
in wild areas
in areas just for one day, and we would have a series. We'd have 9-10 events during the course of the winter. Mm-hmm. And a lot of fun, and that is the longest running series that we have. It's still going on now,
every other Saturday,
except it's not guerrilla now.
We through the winter,
so
doesn't matter if it snows or rain, you play.
The fact is, almost all of those original courses that we use now have permanent courses. Eagle Island State Park, Sandy Point State Park,
Julia Davis Dam
at Lytle Gulch. We got 2 courses out there. There's courses all over, and they all came from our winter series.
This one was Beaver Dicks. And we had to row across the river in rafts to play the other. You had to throw across the river, row across,
really?
And then play the other side and come back without spilling your beer.
Needless to say, that was our guerrilla style course because the lawyers may frown upon that.
Right.
We got away with quite a bit, but we were in and out. That was the key.
It's so cool because the courses didn't. I don't think people now realize because nowadays parks want a disc golf course and they try to find a manufacturer. Like a year or two ago, all the manufacturers were out of baskets because so many parks were begging to get a course in, and that's like the exact opposite of the way it was for about 30 years, right?
It was a struggle to deal with the parks department.
We had to sneak in and pick up and not leave a trace and get out of there, and we could come back next year. Once we started having people set up a little shop there in the parking lot, we got noticed and we couldn't come back then the next year on some of these courses. But we found out where we were welcome and where we weren't, and
it's got a
lot. Welcome most everywhere, actually.
It's got a lot bigger. I mean, Jason here, our buddy Jason, is setting up shop and just totally going out and emptying his store and setting up his store down at the park, making sales. Everybody's just coming down there and going, oh, my God. And just like buying disc. I mean, the first time, I don't know. They might even pay $30 for a disc if it happens to be that way. But I'm still using my old JLS. I love JLS. I mean, I love Millennium Plastic. It's hard to find that one right there. JLS, best plastic on earth. Well, kind of. But it's great now because everybody's involved. And get that out of my face. And everybody's involved, and everybody picks up, everybody helps out, tears down, cleans up, and the last guy on the hole picks up the last basket. We have temporary baskets, so everybody's helping helping this run as good as possible. And sometimes, you know, you have flaws in tournaments, and that's to be expected. Rain, wind, snow, hail, sleet.
Right.
That kind of stuff in one tournament.
So question. I mean, we're kind of almost to some extent the modern day. Like, what have I missed? I mean, have I missed any courses, any towns, promoters, tournaments? I mean, is there any part of the Iowa disc golf industry that would be a fail Iowa? If we don't talk about
it? Iowa?
Did I say
Iowa?
Iowa?
You said Iowa. Was he Iowa? That's a good one, Scott.
Oh, man.
Feedback.
That's a good one.
Everybody thinks we're Iowa.
I was just curious about Iowa. We'll talk about Iowa.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm a smartass.
The eastern part of the state has really developed. The Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Blackwood, in Twin Falls. So there are people running tournaments out there. Brandon Merzlock, Pocatello, Casey Cameron. Sorry, Casey, I butchered your name. Who does Twin Falls?
Mike Stradley, Larry
Lobb and Twin Falls. Twin Falls has a couple of courses in too. So all along the stretch,
DC is one of the best. There's shops out there. Yeah, I love disc golf. See, in Twin Falls.
Yeah, they're a very active group, and they're doing a lot of good stuff out there too. So there's a lot of good stuff in the southern part of the state, and it's spread out east to west. So we have like regional guys, and I'm not traveling as much, so I probably butchered some. I probably missed a lot of people there, but I know I'll speak. I mentioned the Snake River Series. Steve Larson and I ran that in 2000, and then the Snake River Series went away. But then it got resurrected, and I believe Brandon Merzlock was running.
Merzlock, yeah, so. The Mook.
So
there's a lot of good. There's a lot of energy down here, and I think even with the last 3 or 4 years, it's gotten a lot more popular, a lot bigger tournaments, and people are getting money for bigger money tournaments.
In 2000, we had the Northwest Series with Tom Embry and Bruce Sisson in Oregon, and we wish Idaho would join in, and there'd be another Northwest Series with Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. Just throwing that out there, boys. Garden City,
Coeur d'Alene is right in. That'd be a nice
the Coeur d'Alene. That's a good tour. We'd hit Coeur d'Alene for sure. Recreation.
Yeah, back in the days with Bob Paraway and Gordy Crafts, they ran the Inland Northwest Series at had events in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah. It involves a lot of travel for a series. So.
Oh, that's a big area.
Every tournament.
Jack, have I missed anything up north? Have I missed anybody or anything that this would not be a complete story if I leave this thing out?
All the people that have pitched in to form the North Idaho Club. I try to sit back and let other people take the reins there. We mentioned Tom Walker. He was president for a while, and it has evolved with some new courses. We got a new course at Cherry Hill put in a number of years ago with the help of the club, and it's been improved since then. They had a fire smart program where they thinned the trees and cleared the brush, and the city gave us the okay to relay out the course to take advantage of the new open terrain. So, Scott, you're going to see that here in a few weeks when you come up this way for the Cherry Hill event.
I will. So let me give one last plug to what I'm doing. I'm running a PDJ sanctioned disc golf tournament in Twin Falls, Idaho in a couple weeks, and in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Not Iowa, Idaho. I'm doing.
Hey, sorry about that, dude. Caught you good.
I will never live that down. Come on out to those events, please. Please pre-register. Come on out. But other than that, you guys, this is amazing. I one of the cool things about this is this podcast is going to exist forever, right? So these stories, they're never going to not exist for the rest of the history of our sport. And so I really appreciate you guys taking the time to get these. What?
Can I shout out one thing? I got to say, Sean Timberlake was original member. Yeah. He has passed on. He was the guy that taught me how to make those first tire baskets, which started the whole club with baskets. And he's passed on. And I got to shout out to Sean Timberlake.
Thank you. That's what I mean. This is all part of the history.
Hey, Jack.
Well, you guys.
Our sport guys are coming up to see you in Coeur d'Alene soon.
We'll see you in Coeur d'Alene.
Camp out in your backyard.
You have to come to Twin Falls. I'm one of the old guys too, but we're going to have a blast out there. You guys, I have nothing else to say except I really appreciate your time and your effort, and I guarantee you the people in Idaho are all going to enjoy hearing about what goes on. Last thing, you guys won't pat yourselves on the back, but the sport doesn't exist without people like you, because I don't have to know any of the details to know that ain't none of you made a penny doing any of the stuff that you did for decades, right? So the sport is happening in Idaho. It wouldn't be where it was if it wasn't for you guys. That's not an understatement. All of you guys and the other people we talked about, everyone else gets to enjoy, but you guys laid the groundwork. So thank you for the sport of disc golf in Idaho.
Well, laying the groundwork is good, but everybody has to carry on too. And we've got a good group here doing that. So
that's right. They're past the torch.
Thanks for everything. Well, I appreciate it.
Torch to pass though. So thank you all you guys.
Every Sunday.
What?
Every Sunday, 10 a.m. Capitol Boulevard side, Old Hole 1, Sunday Devils. Welcome anytime. Well, you showed up last time.
Glenn. Every day in your backyard, buddy.
Jim State Disc Golf. Jim State Disc Golf. Thanks, you guys. Cheers.
Hey, Jack, you take care of yourself. Thank you. We'll come see you soon.
Hey, I'll be there in a couple weeks.
Sounds good. Look forward to it.
Bye, buddy.
All right.
I'm gonna have to come.
Thanks, you guys.